All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I'm Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. It's Monday, August 12th, 2024. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. I hope it's great wherever you are at. We are the day after, a couple days after the big storm, which never hit us. It's crazy. Typical, right? Everybody gets all juiced up, excited, worried. And we didn't even get any rain. We got maybe a little bit of sprinkling, but nothing. In fact, it's dry. We could have used some rain, but wasn't our turn. So long, Debbie. I hope everyone else was safe from that. I know upstate it got quite a bit of rain and, you know, of course, down in Florida and stuff. T's and P's for all those folks. Hopefully everybody made it. I don't think it was the storm that they made it out to be, but that is just typical what's going on today. I tell you what, man, it is a crazy time to be alive, or it's crazy for me, right? I don't know. This election, the shit on the television, it's insane. I'm starting to think everything is just bullshit. I mean, really, whether it's AI or photoshopped or created by a bot, I don't know, man, but there's just so much information that's coming at me and I'm trying to figure it all out, right? But my goodness, I just saw this. I mean, I don't even know if it's true, right? The latest thing, they show this, you know, these people getting off a plane with this big crowd and then they Photoshop the crowd out. It's like, what do we believe anymore? It's insane. And I don't know. It's testing my sanity for sure. I don't want to just turn off my phone and turn off everything and just put my head in the sand because, you know, I do think we should pay attention to what's coming up and what's happening and the future. One thing I'm learning, man, the future isn't considerate of me. I saw that guy the other day, and he talked about those civilizations, and I had this realization that we're really just playing this role, right, into the advancement of civilization, right? We all play a part, and then when we're done, we die, and then the next person steps in and keeps us moving forward because, we're not going back to the 80s, right? We are not going back. We're not getting rid of phones, right? The only people that really have this issue with this stuff is people like me, right, in my 50s that remember what life was like and how fucked up it is now, right, because of the phones and whatever it is. But, you know, my kids don't feel that way, right? My kids are like, whatever, I don't know what you're all upset about. And, you know, we're just advancing our civilization to what? I do not know. To a place that travels in spaceships, maybe, I don't know, through time, through dimensions, I don't know, right? But I think one day we will, but it isn't, we definitely aren't going backwards. And so just trying to balance all that shit out, I know it's crazy for all of us. You know, you see one thing and then someone says, no, that's not true. And you're like, but I just saw it. And it's like, it wasn't true. And you're like, what? I think I might be going insane. And of course, obviously, I still, getting to, you know, take care of my father. But, you know, it's getting weird for the poor guy, you know. And I shared the other day in that podcast, you know, trying to just keep a positive attitude, an attitude of gratitude. But, you know, he doesn't. And it's tough, right? Because I just sort of want to throw my hands up with that, too. But I can't, you know. I think of all of the times in my life where my dad would have liked to have thrown his hands up and stuck by us. You know, I just have to, his old dad is an inspiration for me taking care of new dad, which is different. And when I picked him up this morning, he's still dealing with this health issue, was one health issue, and he's dizzy from his medication. And, but that's really his only problem. His biggest problem is that he's getting old. And sometimes I don't know if we are willing to accept some new things, right? I mean, at 55, I get up every morning. I don't jump out of bed like I did when I was 17. I don't, you know, every night before bed, I try to do like 10 or 15 push-ups. Man, it's like I need a dresser and a freaking box to hold on to get up. You know, I'm getting old, right? My equipment, my machine is starting to get rough too, and you know, I'm okay with it. You know, But he just has, he cannot, right? He is just like, ooh. And I'm like, you know, he's like, we were coming back. I've shared, you know, we live in a town that's shitload of traffic. He's like, God damn, this traffic's unbelievable. And I go, well, Dad, don't worry, man. We're driving in a decent car, right? We got air conditioning, right? It's only 300-400 yards to the turn where we have to get, right? It's like, you know, find the gratitude somewhere in there. Be glad we have a car, right? Be glad we're not riding a bike. Be glad I could even come get you. Right? He's like, yeah, I guess you're right. But, you know, whether it's him or anybody, whether it's him or me, right? I always have to try. And I do it pretty well, right? I get this early on. I started trying to be positive, and I always try to remain positive. But for him, you know, it's tough. And then, of course, you know, I don't want to push it too far because then he gets all upset and yada, yada, yada. And then we're on a whole different level. Arizona, Kings of Leon. This is off there Because of the Times. I think, you know, I was telling, I don't know, I was talking to somebody about this album. It's one of the greatest for me, you know, and there are a lot of great ones, but the production on that record or the, I guess the production is freaking amazing. The way that album sounds, man, is so good. Listen to it with some AirPods. It's such a great album. If you're a Kings of Leon's fan, you probably already know that. But I absolutely love that album. I used to run to that album, and it was like spiritual, man. It was really cool. But yeah, so that's what I'm dealing with. It is, you know, I have to stay positive, trying to keep my father positive. But man, it is headed downhill quick. And, you know, one of the challenges we have is that, you know, my dad lives alone, and he has a house that is just full of stuff, right? And my brother and I are like, we got to start figuring out what we're going to do with all of this stuff. Like when my mom passed, you know, she had a ton of clothes. My mom was a clothes whore, right? If you want to use the term. She bought tons of clothes. She was an interesting lady, but man, she bought a ton of clothes. And so all of these closets at my dad's house are filled with my mom's clothes. And it's funny because over time, and, you know, especially at the end of my mom's life, and sort of all of this started to become revealed, you know, my mom would, she had a bit of a shopping habit, right? And so she bought a lot of stuff, and my dad just sort of put his head in the sand while she did it, I guess. And so here we are today, and we have closets of clothes. He's like, you know, because my brother, you know, I don't know what my dad's future looks like. It doesn't seem, I mean, physically I feel like he's doing okay, but mentally he's just on a downward spiral. And it's really, it's sad. And, you know, I can give him as many pep talks, but it's hard to pull out of this spiral. So I don't know what the future for my father looks like. I hope he hangs in there, but, you know, it's also, he's miserable. He's a miserable person, and he's stuck there, and I can't get him out. I can't get him out of misery. And so I told him, you know, he came over last night for dinner. I'm like, you know, maybe I need to take over your finances, right? That's always a tough topic, right? Because I think over, you know, kids and parents, especially when they get older, I think that's, you know, parents think their kids are stealing from them. And, you know, I would never steal from my dad. He's always very generous to us, always takes care of us. But, you know, he can't handle it. He emotionally cannot handle paying the bills and dealing with it. And he gets to things like, I'm like, well, Dad, you know, he's a kid. My dad's, we've grown up, not my whole life, but a big portion of my dad's been a computer guy. He loves the computer, builds the computers, writes programs. You know, if your father's, you know, was 50 in the 80s, you know, then he's probably a computer guy and he loves that computer. But the computer has changed. And there's a lot of pitfalls and trouble on the computer. And as a guy that's 55, I barely, you know, I'll use my phone for certain things, but I'm not answering email. I'm not getting hacked, you know. So it's tough out there for the older generation trying to hang in there, and he can't do it. He threw in the towel. And so he's like, you need to pay my bills. And I go, and when I say that, he didn't say it like that, but that's how his voice sounds to me. He was like, you know, I can't handle it. And I go, all right. So this morning I went and got him, and, you know, because I've always been willing to do that for him, but I don't want my dad to think that I'm stealing his money, right? I don't want him to think, you know, whatever they might think. I don't know, whatever scenario you can create that I want to avoid. So I was telling him, I go, listen, you know, because I've been trying to push my father into using the iPad, right? There's an app, you know, he has a bank in PNC and he has another bank. They have apps. I'm like, use the app, right? It's, well, you know, it makes it easier. You don't have to, you know, they're a little more secure if you can use the app. And I can't learn it. And I'm like, all right. So long story short, I took him to breakfast and now I'm trying to help him, you know, with his finances. But I'm like, Dad, I want you to be, you know, I'll do everything through the app, but you can still go on your computer, right? And you can still look it up, make sure everything's going smoothly, right? I don't, you know, I want transparency, right? I don't want any secrets. And so that's what I've been dealing with all morning. And it is, once again, grateful I can be there for my dad. I think we all go through this at some point. Some parents, I'm always amazed when kids and their parents don't live close to each other. Like I have a client, his mom lives in California. He lives in Delaware. I was like, God, I feel like I've shared this. We've always been a very close family, really, because me and my brother couldn't get our shit together. So we've sort of had to be close. And we just sort of stayed with it, right? I didn't move away from my parents. I've always been wanting to be near them. And so, but it's tough. You know, if you're at my age and your parents are getting older and you're starting to deal with this stuff, it is a challenge. Because you're trying to help, right? But they're a little bit off, and, you know, I don't want to make it any worse. So that's what I have been dealing with, and that doesn't have a lot to do. It doesn't have a lot to do with recovery, but it has, I'm able to do all of this because of recovery, right? I've, you know, my dad, he can trust me, right? And we will definitely take care of him. so... Yeah, the other thing is that, you know, my dad and I were talking, you know, when I was trying to give him the pep talk, right? You know, how good we have it, right? All the good things and not a lot of bad. And, you know, it was a reminder, you know, and I don't know if I've shared this, but there was a time when I was in jail in San Diego sitting in a jail cell. And it was a cinder block. And there was a little TV and I think it was the Honeymooners that were on. And I said to myself, I don't care what I'm doing in my life, it's got to be better than this. And I've used that, right? I've used that philosophy through my whole life, right? Anything that I've come up against, like taking care of my dad, I go, you know what, man? It's better than being in a jail cell, right? That's how low my life had gotten. That was the bar. And so when I came into recovery, I remember just, and I think it happens to all of us, and the steps start to show us a way out. But, you know, my life, the people that I hung out with, my thinking, right? Everything was negative and based in self, right? The drinking clearly was the lead horse, but there was a lot of other shit that I did because of that, right? It just didn't, I didn't have a lot of hope. It was half empty. You know, the people I hung out with were this just like me. You know, it's like hanging out with people. Hey, you got $5? No, right? Hey, can you let me borrow $10? I don't got it, right? Nobody had any money. We're just barely hanging on. And it's just a whole hopeless lifestyle. And I remember coming into the program and, you know, putting down the drink, and immediately that started feeling better, but still, right, still having my foot in that life. And, you know, I think that is one of the greatest parts about getting sober, is that I can be live a better life, right? And, you know, I went to the meeting on Saturday, and it's a big book meeting. I think we read page maybe 188. Do I have a big book? I do have a big book. Interesting. I think it was page 188. It was like the number, the appendix. I don't know if it's even in the same. Let's see. Yeah, it was actually page 182. Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. And they talk, you know, I'm a big fan of RFK Jr. I've shared that. And when I talk about RFK Jr., I'm going to talk about RFK Jr. that is sober, not that's running for president, right? Whatever. One of the great things about him is that he's sober, man, and he has 42 years of sobriety, and he's a wealth of knowledge, whether it comes to politics, our country, or recovery, right? And he sat down and was talking to, I think it was with Roseanne Barr, and he was talking about the third person, right? You know, when Bill W. was in ACT, I guess, and I'd heard the story sort of, but he shared the story, and I guess Bill W. had gone to Akron, Ohio, because he was doing a deal with Firestone, the tire company, and I don't know if he was buying the company or whatever had happened, but whatever it was, it fell through, and it sounded like he had lost everything. So he had this moment where he was sitting across from a bar, and he could hear the music and the laughter, and he thought, you know, maybe I should have a drink, right? And on his way towards that, the laughter, he stopped at a payphone, and he decided to call a clergyman to find out if there was an alcoholic that was hopeless, right? If there's a hopeless alcoholic, I think I know how to help him get sober, right, by one alcoholic helping another. And he ended up finding Dr. Bob, right? And Dr. Bob said, and apparently Dr. Bob was a hopeless alcoholic. Everybody knew, right? Back in those days, it was no secret, right, if you were a drunk, because there was no help. There was no cure. And you were just what you were, and everybody dealt with it. Your life made you, or that person, made everybody's life unmanageable. And apparently Dr. Bob was one of those. And Bill had said, you know, got his number, and he says, I'll give you 15 minutes, right? And so Bill went over and talked to Dr. Bob, and apparently they talked for hours, right? And so then they went and found a third guy, right? And in the reading it says, do you think you can quit drinking for 24, or do you think you would like to try to quit drinking for 24 hours at a time? Something like that. Like they had this a list of questions. But when RFK was talking about it, he said that somebody had told Bill Wilson, it said, you either find God or you don't get sober, right? It was pretty cut and dry back in those days. You either find God or you will not get sober. And I couldn't imagine saying that today to somebody, but I will say that that is, I feel, the case, right? I had to find God or I wasn't going to get sober. And the transition from being that self-centered person seeking that self-centered God to a person who has humility and grace and surrender, right, and accountability and rigorous honesty, right? And even Roseanne Barr's like, that rigorous honesty thing is a bitch, right? And because that is it, right? If you, if I am willing and rigorously honest, I can find God. And as I've shared before, when I found God, it wasn't the God that I had been seeking for so long. It was a new God, right? It was a byproduct, right? It was, you know, do this work, rigorous honesty, you know, in your fourth step, right? In your fifth step, even in the third step, right? When we're turning our will and our lives, really when we're starting to make better choices, right? There's always that moment, early recovery, when you're like, yeah, I'm not drinking, but I want to go hang out with Mike, right? But Mike is the epitome of what I'm trying to not do, right? I don't, you know, maybe Mike is a, you know, a cheap thief, right? And a drinker and a drugger, and really will go with the flow to get any sort of substance in his body. And that's the perfect kind of person that I used to hang out with. But I had to start making choices to remove people like a Mike, right? Or a Bill or whatever it is, right? And so those are all humble choices, right? Those are all based in humility. And to me, what I would later learn is that is the beginning of a relationship with God, right? Because when I stopped hanging out with Mike, all of a sudden I wasn't living in that little world that Mike brought along with him, right? I can remember when I was out in San Diego doing drugs and partying and had zero idea or desire to get sober. It was, give me more Mikes, right? I need all the people like Mike. I want them, all the druggies. I want to, you know, and there would be times where I'd get up in the morning, we'd be looking for something, and I'd make 10 phone calls, right? I'd take 10 Mikes, you know, and then by the time through all 10, eventually someone would connect me with someone where we could get something, right? That was the world that I lived in. And all of the shit, right? You know, the night I got punched, we were going over to that guy's house because we were looking for drugs. He was another Mike. That night, though, he didn't want any of it. And so, you know, I got what I got. But that's the world that comes in that lifestyle. And, you know, the first thing I had to start doing is stop hanging out with the Mikes, right? And that's what's great about the program, and especially for me, at least at the time, because I was in that aftercare program and I became friends with my buddy Rick and my buddy Tim and several other people that were in that program that are all still sober today. Because those were my new Mikes. But when I would hang out with them, we would get coffee and maybe grab a meeting. We would go hang out with other people in recovery trying to do the same thing. And so, you know, even back to the third step, right? Starting to build a relationship with the God of my understanding, or maybe my not understanding, right? I did not understand the relationship I was building at the time. I didn't understand how that all worked. But today, you know, working these steps in the rigorous honesty, right? Especially the fifth step we've talked about. Just sitting down and sharing all those dirty secrets, right? It's the rigorous honesty, because in the end, we become free, right? Like, you know, one of the cool things that I've learned, especially in my recovery is, and with accountability, is that I don't have to drag that shit around, right? I can make a mistake. I can do something stupid. I can, you know, whatever it is. And then I can, first of all, obviously make an amends, but I can say, what was that about? You know, what were you hoping to get out of that, right? The next level of being cool, fitting in with certain people, possibly something happened. I don't know, right? But there was some motivation behind it. And so not only do I want to be accountable and aware and make an amends and clean up the apology, but I also want to be motivated to not do it again, right? Because when things like that happen, then there are things that I carry around. You know, my father, he's not... My father is a victim of me, unfortunately. My father is a victim of my brother, right? And the problem is my dad doesn't... There is no possible way in hell that my dad would be able to say, you know what, man, I probably played a part in that, right? Right. Even though he, you know, we're shitheads, he's desperately trying to help us, you know, in the... On the big picture, it looks like he's doing the right thing and we're doing the wrong thing, right? But he could have like said, you know what, I'm not going to help you, you know? And that's a tough one, right? Especially when they're your children, right? But he could have, you know, it happens with me, you know, my kids, you know, they run me rabbit, right? You know, my kids are good, but, you know, I'm always spending extra money on them, doing extra things that I probably shouldn't have done, you know, get in, let them get in away. You know, we have chores they're supposed to do. Sometimes they don't do them. I'm like, you know, no big deal. I should probably be stronger, right? Because they're my cute kids and I don't want to upset them and hurt their feelings. But, you know, I could be better, right? And so, you know, one day my kids may turn out to be a knucklehead like me and I can look back and say, you know what? Part of this is my fault. You know, I should have been tougher, right? Regardless, you know, that's just an easy story to make up. But the fact is that, you know, my dad constantly lives in the past, right? He's always, you know, it's always about the past and the shit we did. And instead, you know, and for me, I don't live in the past anymore. I don't even talk, you know, if I bring up the past, it's usually like, look how fucked up I was and look how grateful I am that I'm not there today, right? And like the jail cell story. I don't sit around going, I was in a jail cell. Yeah, I was a fucking douchebag, right? I needed to be in a fucking jail cell. That's my fault, right? I've made amends for it. I'm accountable. I know what I did. I've made amends. I'm done with being a victim of that fucking jail cell. But my dad is just an example of like a lot of people, right? The lack of ability to be accountable for the role or part that we played in every situation. And today, you know, I don't have to live with that anxiety, right? Today, I try to live with a freaking clean plate. A clean plate to me is God. Right, I don't have anything I'm working on. You know, lately I've had to fix two clients' hair lately, which has really like filled up my plate with insecurity. People are a pain in the ass. All this, you know, where, and I'm not even sure. I mean, I can be accountable because obviously I did the service. I thought the service was pretty good. Right, it's always just a matter of opinion. I thought the service was good. But for some reason, these two people did not really like it. I did fix one of them this morning, and it was just a little, I mean, it was literally, I could have probably, I don't know, for some reason her hair, she was like, I want my hair to be buttery, right? Yellowy, buttery. I mean, you can't say yellow, buttery is different than yellow, but you know, let's be honest, butter is a little bit yellow. But I, you know, I don't usually try to make yellow hair. So I thought it was great, but she texts me, she's like, just, it's too yellow. And I'm like, oh God. And so, you know, plates full, anxiety, stress, you know, annoyed. I'm retiring. I quit. Fuck people. Yada, yada, yada. I really go off the deep end pretty quick. Went in, fixed her hair. Not a big deal. I got to fix another lady's hair on Thursday. This one, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm just not holding the hand of God right now because I feel victim-y. I feel self-consumed. You know, but I could pray right now. You know, dear Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you for keeping another day sober. Watch over me all day and yada, yada, yada. I could make the prayer, but the new God, right? New God is that lives inside me is bouncing around because I'm having trouble being accountable for this problem, even though I did the hair, right? I've sort of got my feet dug in and I'm sort of suffering from it. And, yeah, I think just, you know, the idea that, and then they said, and I may have this wrong, but I think it says, be still, I am God. Be still, I am God. And if I think I have that correct. And when I heard that, I was like, yes, right. Be still, I am God. Like, be still, Tom. From all of the self-centered shit that goes on, the character defects, the shortcomings, the, you know, the thoughts, the negative thoughts, the, you know, the boastful thought, all of it, you know, just stop and find that place of peace, right? Be still, Tom. And when I can find it, and I have found it through the steps, it fluctuates momentarily, right? But I get it, right? And through the steps and rigorous honesty, right? I found this place where I can be still, free of fear, free of worry. And to me, that is God. Be still, I am God. And, you know, in the end, it really comes down to that. You know, if there's a, you know, if you can't find God, it's going to be a rough path. And, you know, the other thing is that, you know, people do come into the program and they go to meetings twice a day, right? It becomes their world. Right, I went to the meeting on Saturday, and I said, you know, I hate meetings. Tell you like that. I hate these fucking meetings, and I'd rather be at home. You know, but this is the fucking burden I bear, man. This is what I got to do. and I get to do it, and I have a great attitude about it. But let's be honest, this is the path. If I want to stay sober, I must go to a meeting, and I must work with other alcoholics, and I must continue to work these steps and be workable, right? Because I get better, and then I get sick, and it's just never ending, right? But until we find God. No, the other thing I was going to say, that, you know, I know people that come to meetings every day, twice a day, right? 30 years of sobriety. I've been dealing with this fucking asshole, excuse my French, and I've shared about it on this podcast. This guy, he just thinks he's freaking so funny. He likes to be, you know, I was coming out of a meeting. I go back and forth with this guy all the fucking time, and I was coming out of the meeting the other day, and he slapped my stomach, and he's like, "Been eating well, have you?" And I'm like, you know, fuck you, right? I'm working on a bitch, right? But he's like, I'm like, not necessary, right? I you know what I said? I said, whatever, man, and I just walked away. And he's like, what are you so sensitive about, right? What are you so sensitive about? And then he called me that night. I did not answer. He sent me this text, hey, yeah, some people don't appreciate that sarcasm. You know, I hang out with a group of guys that, you know, we always bust each other's balls. And, you know, some people just can't handle it. So, you know, I'm sorry about that. And I'm like, okay, right? And did not answer that. And I'm changing my meanings. I've been sober too long to deal with these, you know, and he's got 30-something years, right? 30-something years, and he's a fucking pain in the ass. Then he texts me the other day, I hope you come back to the meeting. And I'm like, I'll just go to different meetings, right? I don't need to be part of that. And this guy has not found God, and he is dry, right? He's a 30-something-year sober, dry drunk is what he is. And but that's fine for some people, right? That is fine. I do not want to live like that. You know, I want to do the work and find the byproduct of God and be cool with it, right? I want to be still. I am God. And I can tell you, he's up in his head because he knows he's a dick. You don't say shit. You know, it's always something. Every time I say, hey, you okay? You know, what's wrong with you? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, hey, don't get so sensitive. He just always busting my balls, which is great, right? But then I got to start busting balls, right? And then I start saying shit. And then I'm feeling bad for what I said, and I just don't want to get into it. Anyway, yeah. All right, I'm going to read the Daily Reflections. I've gone long, sorry. Is anybody going through this to help, you know, this helping your parents and your father? And yeah, it's not easy. All right, Daily Reflections. A look backward, August 12th. First, we take a look backward and try to discover where we have been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we have done. Yeah, basically. 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, page 77. As a traveler on a fresh and exciting AA journey of recovery, I experienced a newfound peace of mind, and the horizon appeared clear and bright. Rather than obscure and dim, reviewing my life to discover where I had been at fault seemed to be such an arduous and dangerous task. It was painful to pause and look backward. I was afraid I might stumble. Couldn't I put the past out of my mind and just live in my new golden present? I realized that those in the past whom I had harmed stood between me and my desire to continue my movement towards serenity. I had to ask for courage to face those persons from my life who still lived in my conscience, to recognize and deal with the guilt that their presence produced in me. I had to look at the damage I had done and become willing to make amends. Only then could my journey of the spirit resume. Yeah, see, that's the shit I just talked about.
Jesus.
Exactly. They wrote it first. I'm just experiencing it. But due to these people writing this stuff and the 12 steps of AA, I've learned about it and I can talk about it. But it's, you know, it's not an original thought. These guys were, this is the issue, right? We cannot be victims of the past. And my dad is a victim, and so he cannot, it's always half empty, right? And until I became accountable and started to realize that the part I played in every freaking situation that's ever happened in my life, finally then Could I move forward and start to live in this place, this newfound place? Peace, love, free of fear, which is my new God. I hope everybody has a great day. Sorry I went a little long. Great song, though. Bye-bye.